What is happening now? My phone rang this morning. It was 25 people in the desert who have been dumped by the Tunisian authority. Now we are talking about Libya, but the same thing is being implicated in Tunisia, where people are captured at sea and they are sent 200 kilometers, up to 400 kilometers away from the city in the desert, and they are left to die there. There are also people dying at sea. There are those in detention center. There are those in Libya who would like to access hospitals or to give birth. This is in terms in regard to pregnant women, and they cannot access public hospital. When they call, we have to coordinate all the member states, all the UN agencies, and say, listen, we have someone who is dying. We have someone who has to give birth. Will you do something, please?
This is the podcast to restore your faith in humanity. Once giraffe heroes, we now call our participants guardians of humanity. Courageous, tireless workers for the common good. May each of them inspire you to follow in their tracks and contribute your own part to a just society and a healthy environment.
Welcome, dear listeners, to another episode of the podcast to restore your faith in humanity. Today, we welcome David Oliver Yasona Yambio, 26 years old and currently a citizen of Modena in Italy. If we put his biography on a fast lane, it would read like this. Born in Sudan during the Second Civil War, his family forced to flee to Congo and later to the Central African Republic, where they had no access to education or resources. He returned to South Sudan when he was seven. Then at the age of 12, he was abducted by the LRA, the army led by Joseph Kony. He fought as a child soldier for over a year, then escaped only to find himself forcibly conscripted by the Sudanese government at the age of 16. David became a refugee at 17, crossed half of Africa to find himself in Libya, where he was tortured, exploited, forced to labor, to arbitrary detentions, kidnappings, and finally he was sold to militias to fight in the Libyan Civil War. After four failed attempts to reach Europe, he started working with Libyan organizations and international NGOs to fight for the rights of refugees. He started radio programs, co-founded the organization Refugees in Libya. Then he spent months on the run for the Libyan Secret Service, who didn't like what he did. Then he did a fifth and finally successful attempt to cross the Mediterranean Sea. David now lives in Italy, where he launches campaign after campaign to raise awareness and pursue legal actions for the cause of refugees in Libya and people on the move in the North African region. Sorry, David, for spoiling it to all of our listeners. I told everything yet, but I just had to do it, for it reads like a life-spanning biography, and yet you are barely 26 years old. How on earth did you survive all this? Do you have a guardian angel?
Well, thank you, Dimitri. I think that was a very brief and well-articulated introduction. How could I have survived this? I think it's a question that I find myself in it every day. But also, to keep surviving, I have to keep asking those questions every day. Why did I deserve this? And what do I deserve best? Why are people in my community or the ones that I have witnessed go through certain similarities? For how many lives I have had, I do not know. But I kept waking up, and to this day, I'm speaking to you.
Can you explain in short what has been going on in Libya ever since you came there? What did you witness exactly?
Upon my arrival in Libya in at the end of 2018, what I found in Libya is indescribable. It was a nightmare made of torture, exploitation, slave labor, dehumanization, and all sort of things that no human deserved to be treated in such a manner. For us, Those who have survived civil wars in our countries of origin and the desert that most of the people die while trying to reach certain regions, we have been put as a piece of token by politicians. And for the human traffickers, we became a banknote that they can sell and multiply. And to the Libyan common people, we are the invaders because this is what their politicians tell them, that these people are coming to take over your lands, they're coming to take over your jobs, they're coming to change the demographic population of Libya. And therefore, we are victims. Not only victims, we became outlaws. We could not, in particular, I could not receive any shelter, not even from the religious people, not from the common people, not from the law enforcement, not from the government. I was a victim in every angle, in every manner. That means that men are bound to torture in an attempt to extort money from their family, and it's something which is happening to this day. Women are raped as an effort to extort money from their families or to use them as sex slaves in a manner that I feel ashamed to explain. In this situation, children live without dreams because they never truly have the chance to. They cannot go to school. Those born in Libya and they have grown up in Libya for the past 20 years, they don't have the right to access education, public health facility, or even their parents cannot have access to jobs. All this ill treatment is something that I try every single day. How do I put in words? How do I really make sure that it is understood without having to show the violence, which is heavily been documented by international actors that travel to Libya, journalists, common people that try to document and say, hello, can you look here? There is something which is really happening that is inhuman, that shouldn't continue. And we try to focus on the actors who are perpetuating these crimes, who are aiding and abetting it. And these are our European friends, the politicians who constantly take shuttles between Tunisia, Libya, and elsewhere with the claim that they want to dismantle the human trafficking networks, that they want the everything is under migration management. All these things, it's not been manageable. I'm coming to you.
Yes, but exactly this point, it's European politicians who gave the Libyan government a free pass and the money to detain, to torture, to kill people. Still, there is a force that leads you to become an advocate for a positive change within the legal boundaries of the Western society, instead of a revengeful activist, because you could have become that as well. After all, the system tried to kill you.
That's absolutely right. But again, all the reasons and all the efforts that is bringing me upright to this moment and is still having faith in humanity is related to my country. When I was young, as you heard in my biography, you narrated it yourself, I was a refugee. At the age of 2 months old, my family were forced to flee. This is one thing that should be put in question. Being a refugee is not a friendly thing. You are completely in despair. You do not know what to eat. You do not choose what to eat. You do not choose how to even comfortably sleep. All these, when we returned back and I faced the abduction and forced to fight and forced to witness things that were beyond the comprehension of a child. So my childhood itself was something completely stolen. It was not acknowledged in that moment. And then growing up at the age of 16, again, being conscripted forcibly by my own government to fight my own people, and becoming 17, 18, I had to decide whether I want to choose fighting alongside my government to kill my own people, people who had everything common with me, that they had simple ambitions, simple dreams, simple wishes to build a beautiful society, but were consequently denied from having this. I chose to leave my country, to become a refugee, to be a testament to what is happening in my country, to be an advocate in the spirit that one day I could return home and make that place livable for many people, for many children, to restore the dreams of those who have had their dreams shattered. All this today, arriving in Europe and in the foreign countries where I migrated in those years, and finding the same ill treatment, I would have turned, because Libya was forced, even in Libya, to take part in the civil war of 2019 and 2020. I would have focused on that and say, okay, if I cannot survive anymore, let's just damage everything. But again, my hope, I was constantly in the spirit that no, if I'm still surviving, it means that I have to do something. I have to give hope to those who are losing hope. For example, today we have the International Criminal Court. This, in some instances, have given hope to many people. The international community have given hopes to so many people, with the hope that once you leave your country as a victim, as a survivor, as a witness, there is a possibility to fight back in a very positive way, without having to massacre people, without having to take a life of a person. And this is what we are doing exactly today in Europe, with the background, with the European Common People, to change their consciousness, to awaken it, to understand something that is happening because they are part of the consequences. We try to do it so in a subtle way, to revolutionize the thinking, by trying to understand that Libya or Africa is not so far away as it used to be 400 years ago. We are now very close, we are neighbors, and it takes just few hours to be together. Should we recognize each other as equally humans?
You describe the situation in Libya as hell, and yet it seems hardly possible that one can still be horrified by anything after the horror of being a child soldier. In all the previous misfortunes that you, the years you spent in Congo, Central African Republic, and in Sudan, were there then still parts of happiness or parts of normal life that were completely missing in Libya? What is the difference?
The difference, I think most people like me has in this moment, I will speak for myself. When I left my country, I had chosen those emotions to be cemented far away. In most scenarios, I couldn't cry about missing my family. I have a very big family of 28 siblings. I didn't know where they were for a number of years. I did not want to think about them because it would be a means of a weakness. I did not want to imagine the people who have died, because it would distract me more to become more violent or aggressive in a scenario where I did not want to be. And in some instances in Congo, in Central Africa, in South Sudan, there were moments where I felt like, yes, this is happiness. This could be if we fight for it. Well, when I was able to go to primary school, for example, when I had the chance to spend only 2 years in high school, which until then I could not go to school until this day. I looked back in Congo, where people were very hopeful in those refugee camps. Even though they had little to depend on, they could still hope for something. But in Libya, it was completely the contrary, because every single day you are tortured, you are dehumanized, you are completely degraded to feel subhuman because of your color of skin, because of your identity as a religious person or whatever you believe in, that we have nothing in common. There are Arabs who, with existing Arab racism, have been fueled by the European actors trying to influence them, trying to make me be as a threat to the Libyan people. Because before, this was not a thing. Now that there is money in the middle, there is someone manipulating constantly in different angles, with carrying propaganda saying, these people who are coming to your country, they are a threat. In 20 years, they will take over your country. We also do not want them to reach our countries. What if we give you millions of money that you benefit at the same time, and you kick the threat away from your country? So, looking at all these circumstances, this was the difference. There was not a chance to walk in the street of Tripoli or any part of Libya without feeling threatened, without feeling at risk of being kidnapped, because you are a something, you are an object that can be owned, that can be sold.
It's unimaginable. Do you still find people here in Europe who don't believe this? Because
They are. I remember last year in at the end of June, I was at the Camera Deputati in Italy, in the Italian Parliament. The idea of going there was to tell what I have experienced in Libya and what I'm doing today as an ad community advocate, as a human rights defender and a co-founder of Refugees in Libya, which is a self-organized movement that explains the experience of thousands of people that try to advocate for change. At this moment, I was attacked by one of the parliamentarians. I don't remember her name. She's from the Meloni government, that I'm just lying. She told it in my face with all the parliamentarians sitting in the room and saying, "No, this is not true. How can we know that you're not lying?" The fact that I have all the scars on my body, visible and invisible ones, was really a pain that I could not move along with. But it also was a motivation to keep fighting, to say, okay, if we have people in top government positions that even claim to not recognize the damage and the mess that they have done to my life and to the many more children who have been forced to take on the dinghies on the Mediterranean and they die as a result. What about the common people who believe so much in their politicians, who believe so much in the political system today, that whatever is said, oh, our politicians said, our scientists said, our researchers said, our academics, they said. So all these things, they are people who do not believe because they choose not to believe. For the common people, they are always outraged to listen to what is happening. But there is a difference, as I say, images, videos, when we try to bring it into reality and people see it, people are much more to change. But also, it's always like an invitation for them to shut their door because they have never experienced violence. I'm talking about the last two generations who, after the Second Civil War in Europe, have not experienced anything nearby. Now we see the comparison in Ukraine, how people have been reacted, have reactively, participated in active solidarity, in recognizing the Ukrainian pain, in recognizing the solidarity that should be given once a neighboring country is not at peace. Once people are forced, women, children, to take dangerous journeys to leave their homes. Now it is the same when you look at the countries like Chad, like Central Africa, like Uganda, like Kenya, who have been openly, receiving refugees from the neighboring countries. Now, given the Sudanese crisis. So we try to put this comparison, well, to say, okay, your parents, your grandparents, your ancestors, in 1940s, this is what they experienced. But for us, we have been experiencing it since that time, since the colonial time and the post-colonial time. We have been at war. We know what is exactly happening in Ukraine. And if you should be active to practice any form of solidarity, it should be equal. It shouldn't be all to the left or to the right. You have to be equal. Recognize Ukraine, recognize Sudan, recognize the Nigerian people, recognize the people of sub-Saharan countries. Why do they flee?
David, you rightly say that we have been living in peace for several generations here in Europe. Yet, I work as a psych. Well, I'm not a psychologist, but what I do, I work in the field of psychology, let's say, and I can tell you we have a lot of work. And these are people who were raised in comfort, in well-fed homes. I will not make a paradise out of it because in the mind there is a lot of bad things going on. But have you ever seen a psychologist? Because
No.
I cannot believe you're talking about the scars on your body. There must no one can truly believe that your mind is not traumatized as well after all that you've lived.
It is, but the fear is always if I collapse, then we haven't changed a lot. We need to keep going, and it's a sacrifice that I give to myself every day. A sacrifice that people cannot understand, that there's so many scars from childhood of never having love in a country, of having been betrayed by one's country, of never being a citizen to anywhere. Because for us to be a citizen is a different thing. We can be whoever, we can be a national, we can be born in a certain place. But if I truly become a citizen, I need to fall in love with my country. And this has never happened because we have been made slaves throughout the colonial era and the post-colonial, the people who took power, our government does not recognize that we deserve to participate in every state affairs, to being born in that particular country, to becoming citizens and to becoming, you know, or whoever. I'm not a nationalist, but in that particular moment, I would like to feel at home. I would like to have, you know, the feeling of paradise, that this is where I was born and I make it livable for many as it can accommodate.
So you never saw a psychologist because you fear that it will make you collapse?
That is one thing. And the other reason is that I never truly had the time to see a psychologist. So I have been moving around. I have a lot of things to attend to, and to have breakfast or to have lunch is always a question. Can I really have it? Do I really have to take a break? Which is not bad in other sense, but again, no one should really be forced to live the life I'm living. Even after arriving in Europe, the so-called democratic country, the so-called paradise that we have been long preached to, you know, since in schools, it was all about Europe. And yet we are not welcomed here.
Wow. David, can you describe for our listeners the job that you do today? What is your, because you said before we started this conversation, I have to shut off my phone because otherwise I will get like 100 calls in an hour. Is that your job?
This is just one of my many jobs. After I survived and arrived here in Europe, a year before, I had formed a hotline during the protest in Tripoli, which happened after the eviction of the Gregarage neighborhood, which is west of Tripoli, in 2021, in October, on the 1st of October, to be precise. This particular neighborhood was raided. More than 5,000 people, women, children, were rounded up and taken to detention camp. One of it is known as Del Mabani. And in this place, we were kept there. And those of us who survived, of course, we went to the UNHCR headquarters where we founded Refugees in Libya. And during this moment, I was one of the few people who had mobile phones. I started to distribute my number to people to reach out to us, to contact, to be able to come to join the protest, because it was something that all the refugees in Libya were waiting for, a place to bring them together to start challenging the inhuman treatment we were receiving. Throughout these years, it grew every day. It became a network of people, of information, of resources, of people trying to advocate, of people trying to be a witness to something that they experience. Now, every day, my phone rings because someone is being tortured in Libya, someone is being kidnapped, and €10,000 is demanded from his family in Ethiopia, in Eritrea, in Kenya, in the neighboring countries. And these, if people would like to see, they should visit the Twitter account or the website of refugeesinlibya.org. They will find all these things that I'm talking about there. So what is happening now? My phone rang this morning. It was 25 people in the desert who have been dumped by the Tunisian authority. Now we are talking about Libya, but the same thing is being implicated in Tunisia, where people are captured at sea and they are sent 200 kilometers, up to 400 kilometers away from the city in the desert, and they are left to die there. These people, when they call to be rescued, what effort do I have? I only have to coordinate and collect their testimonies and try to make sure that the state, which has a mandate to protect every person within its territory, is respecting this mandate. and therefore they managed to rescue. There are also people dying at sea. There are those in detention center. There are those in Libya who would like to access hospitals or to give birth. This is in terms in regard to pregnant women, and they cannot access public hospital. When they call, we have to coordinate all the member states, all the UN agencies, and say, listen, we have someone who is dying. We have someone who has to give birth. Will you do something, please? So this is the job that I do. And apart from that, every day we launch campaigns that you mentioned. This year, we have a campaign that is focused on the evacuation of human rights defenders. These were human rights defenders who were with me, and they were captured and punished almost 2 years, 18 months under torture, under imprisonment and enslavement. When we advocated for them and they got released, they found themselves in the same conditions in the streets of Tripoli, facing destitution and lack of services, lack of recognition and protection. The idea is to advocate with welcoming cities across Europe to recognize them as human rights defenders, not just as vulnerable people in a society, but for the role that they do, that I am doing, such that they can be welcomed here in such a manner.
So you are on the pay list of the UN. You work for the UN.
No, we try to push
You do
the
this.
UN to do their mandate. We are not
You do
their
this
paying people.
voluntarily.
It's voluntarily. We do it all voluntarily. We try to push them to do their mandate because when I was in Libya for 4 years, the UN did not do what it is mandated to do. I faced lack of service, lack of advocacy from the UN for my well-being as a person. So all that they are supposed to do to speak here with member state to tell them the agreement that Italy is having with Libya, for example, or the EU is having with Tunisia is something that is massacring people every single day. The UN is not able to say this. Independent finding mission have been initiated to go to Libya to document what is happening, and they confirm that there is crimes against humanity which have been committed thanks to the financial support and technical support of the European Union and member countries. And again, this is something that is a lucrative business, generating enormous amount of money to both the Libyan government, the private militias, and the European politicians. This is not lies. These are facts that have been documented by the Independent Finding Mission. MSF, for example, have been traveling to Libya for a number of times, and what they document is enormous, which should be enough for the European actors, for the common people, to change their perspective of what is happening in our society. Because Libya is part of our European society. We cannot exclude it.
Nevertheless, who pays for your meals? Who pays for the rent of the room that you live in right now?
That is the thing. When I arrived here, I first had to focus on the dream that I had with the other thousands of people in Tripoli in 2021. Our idea of coming together to form a 100 days protest was to build a bridge over the Mediterranean, not the cemetery where thousands of people in the graveyard in the depths of Mediterranean are today. With this idea, I started to cement together civil societies. We started with sea rescue organizations, lawyers, people working on migration-related cases across Europe. Through this, we managed to bring them together to form a solidarity network that recognizes the refugees who are in Libya before they are rescued on the Mediterranean, to understand why these people are fleeing. You cannot keep rescuing me every day without knowing where I'm coming from, without knowing why did I choose to leave my parents, why did I choose to leave my schoolmates, why did I choose to leave my brothers and sisters, my beautiful food that I am accustomed to eat every single day. All these things, we have managed to build a support network that is advocating alongside refugees in Libya. Through this, I gain several support. If in little proportion, it is enough to keep me moving, to pay for my rent, because the first thing was to feel at home, to have my small private room, as I am now very small quarter, where I can pay each month 350 euro to 400. All these things, it's not an easy amount here in Europe to have.
No.
But through this support, I managed to have it for 1 year. I worked with another civil society to try to also in migration related file.
Yeah.
And that's it. Now I don't have a job. Fine.
So you live in Modena in Italy.
Yes.
Is that the right place for you to be right now? Is do you feel like one, do you feel safe in Italy?
Yes, I do. It may not be the right place because I never chose to be here. I came here by circumstance, and as adaptive as I have been, I had to adapt. This is the first place where I lived in Europe, and I have been here. I made a bunch of families here. I made people, university student, to write thesis on my country and on Libya. This is a revolution that should be valued, that through this, not only one, but several university students to write their research documents, to write their thesis on the stories that I tell them of the people, of myself, of my country, and all this, because it is missing in the European framework of studies and so on. So we have to make things plain. We have to really deblock or unblock the bubbles where Europeans are finding themselves. Through this, I'm not supposed to be here, but I'm also supposed to be here because if I'm not, who should be here? This is the question every day which keeps me, well, I need to make it a home livable for every people.
Yeah.
So I have managed also to influence common people here who are now receiving people, migrants, when they come, they pick them, they keep them in their backyard, they eat together. This is something that we would like to see across the world, not only in Europe, where our different differences of color or religion is not really a barrier to being human.
And do you think that there are certain countries inside of Europe that would be more helpful for you whenever you are in contact with, like, say, 25 people who are in the desert, and you have to raise awareness and make people work and have some kind of rescuing them? Do you feel that the Italians are cooperative? And if not, would there do you hear stories of certain countries that are more cooperative in these matters?
It's not only stories, it's experience. I imagine that in Switzerland, it's a home of the United Nations, the flag countries. What is best is that we can find people who are really committed to try to understand what is happening. The Italians, from the Italian government, there is very little cooperation, but the civil society across here in Germany, in France, what is it? I'm
Spain.
trying to remember. As far as Sweden and Norway, we have a cooperation with these people, and they're really being helpful. Of course, it's in very small proportions, and we are trying to increase the quota every day, which is by influencing common people. From there, we can influence politicians, because our faith in political system in Europe is really little, but for us to restore that hope in the political spectrum, we need to influence the common people. We need to influence the people who take their votes and who give mandate to the key individuals in our society.
David, are you again in contact with your family in South Sudan, or where are they now?
My family are still in four neighboring countries. They have been scattered around. Some of them are in Congo, and now they are facing the war again, which is really the deadly war in Congo. They cannot reach South Sudan. Some of them are in South Sudan, some of them in Congo. I'm glad those in Uganda, they are studying, and those in Central Africa, they are completely cut off. There is no communication to them. And I'm the only one in Europe so far, but I am in touch with most of them, like my mother and a few of my siblings. It's been several years I haven't seen them, and no one deserved that. Even now, it's difficult for me to travel there to South Sudan to see them because the whatever the political system here that recognize refugees, I cannot go back to South Sudan.
Unless you have an Italian citizenship or something.
And this is another topic that we should talk about maybe another day. The difference that we see here, what needs to change in the Geneva Convention, which is not being respected at all by member state in Europe.
In the US, they have this system of the green card where as an immigrant, you can come as far as you have work. In Europe, we don't really have that. There is a lack of hand labor. We need people here to work, yet we refuse people from Africa to come here to be schooled and to work.
To be sincere, what is happening here in Europe is not, as we say, that we are there are the political or the authoritative power in Europe does not want people from Africa. That is contrary to the truth. What is happening is an active exploitation, continuous colonial approach, that when we have these people, they should come at a cheap in a cheap manner. In a way that they feel constantly threatened because they are not documented, they are not identified, and having to live under this perpetual fear, they can do anything at a cheap way. Now, in southern Italy, where a number of people arrive, they are forced by circumstance. It's not a forced enslavement. It is an institutional enslavement. So in this manner, people are working per hour. They are paid 6 euros to cultivate those tomatoes, to cultivate those apple or peach or different type of things. This active exploitation is a continuation of institutional racism that these people does not deserve to be on the equal level. On being paid these 6 euros an hour, they don't have access to health care. They don't have health insurance. They don't have access to housings. They sleep under those bridges. They sleep in those slums. And all these things, when you look at it, Italy needs a handful of thousands of people each year to come and work in Italy. You look at the aging population across Europe. Germany, how many a thousand of people that they need to work? How many does the Switzerland has a country need to work? This workforce, of course, it's not like we have to depend on Africa, but no country is self-sufficient. We have to say this clear. Even my country, South Sudan, which is constantly at war, we have never been self-sufficient. We have workers from different expertise who come from Kenya, from Somalia, from Eritrea, from Congo, from Uganda, and they work in South Sudan. Given all these circumstances of war, the same in Europe here. What needs to be recognized is the equalness, the freedom of movement, to really put away this institutional racism and the colonial approach, which is still a continuation. Or I'm not well articulated in saying the neocolonial approach because these are academic language. When I speak clearly to the point which is happening. So what we see here is the collapse that you're talking about in 2 decades. It's already started. There is a change in the food market, in different resource market. Now we had the war in Ukraine, which is changing a lot with the energy, with all this topic. That is why you see a continuous shuttle of European actors to the North African region, to Tunisia, to Libya, and say, we want cooperation, we want energy. But in the framework of energy, we will give you money. We don't want migrants. But in the contrary, when they arrive, they are said, okay, can you work? We will pay you this. So looking at these things, we are advocating as much as we can to have a political participation. As a refugee here today with political asylum, I do not have any political participation in Europe whatsoever. I cannot even vote for a small commune where I'm living, which is a home to 6,000 people. I do not have a decision making in that perspective. How I want to see this society, to embrace one another. I cannot have a say. We are trying to see all these things and to change it, to influence, not on our interest, but in the interest of everyone. We looked at now, let's say, the electoral campaign, which happened a few days ago, the European electoral campaign, how it all went. Who are the people who got voted? We look into France. We look the 2022 when Giorgia Meloni was elected. What was her campaign about? It was about illegal immigration. It's a disease. We have to cure it. So there is a problem.
Yes. Nevertheless, in the community of Modena where you live, do you feel that people know you, that you have you're talking about you meet families? Are these are all immigrants? Or have you do you have good contacts with Italian people as well?
Well, when I say people know me and I have families, it's not immigrants. Of course, I have immigrant community that are my power, but what I try to change here are exactly the contrary, the European people, to build relationship with them, which is not based on saviorism. This act of saying, "Oh, poor migrant, he doesn't have anything to sleep on, he doesn't have food, he have to go to Caritas every Wednesday to receive a portion of food." No, what we want is an equalness. If I am coming from another country with a different experience of how to earn food, because in my country I have to cultivate, I don't have to buy it. Here, teach me, how do I buy it? How do I do this? How do I learn how to drive a car? How do I learn how to shoe something together? How do I learn different approach?
Are
So
you
all this is
Italian?
put a little bit, but I have always been out of Italy, so it's making it extremely difficult to grab a language, especially when the mind is really very active on certain survival mode, either on myself or for other people. So in this aspect, I am in touch with a handful of Italian people. I'm not only known in Modena, but I could say almost all over Italy. I have already very beautiful connection, beautiful families, and we are still trying to build that, to shield ourselves together as common people, being able to restore our faith in humanity, as you said.
What can our listeners do to help refugees in Libya, your organization?
Those who are listening, there are so much that they can do. Let's start by simple task. Today we live in a social media influenced era, which means that we are able to distribute and disseminate information just with one click. We would like to invite them to look up refugees in Libya. They just need to type it on either social platforms, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, or our website, refugeesinlibya.org. There are stories that are really suitable for school students that need to be taught. There are stories that are suitable for the common people, the church members, the politicians, to bring it as an argument to whenever politicians are saying bullshit or propaganda or misleading, having, to put a society to have a different image of me crossing the Mediterranean, that these people, I am an invader because I cross the Mediterranean irregularly. So all these things is one way to help. We also need resources. If there is other way that they can provide assistance, they need to invite us to their schools, to their church, to their gatherings, to their every spaces. We need a space. We don't have a space. We need a space where we can speak, where we can have a dialogue. So they can help in this aspect. They can donate if they have money. They can do many things. They can become members of Refugees in Libya, which means they will actively engage in delivering practical support to the people who are still stuck in Libya, to the people who have just arrived in Europe, to help integrate them. It can be to teach them a language that they speak. The listeners, I doubt that it will only be the Swiss people. But they can teach them something in their community, how to survive, how to live, how to have peace of mind itself, how to be accepted in a community. So all these things, there is a variety of things that they can do. But the first thing, let's start with the simple, as I said, you get to know us, and then invite us to wherever that you are, and we can tell them more what we can do together. Now we have the Human Rights Evacuation Defender Campaign. We would like that they approach their local leaders, for example, the mayors or different cities, to tell them we have a people in Libya. We would like to invite them to come and live in Europe because we recognize their vulnerability, their human rights work, and we would like to embrace them for that. They can also support NGOs who are working on Libya. For example, the Humanitarian Corridor, which is managed by the Italian Church, Sant'Egidio. We also have MSF who are still operating in Libya to support them and say, okay, this is what we want to do. They can also write letters to the European Union asking them to stop financing the circumstance which we are talking about in Libya. They can also write to the United Nations to try to come up with a new mechanism which puts an end to the violence against people on the move in Libya.
You have met the Pope, haven't you?
Yes, it's really funny how people receive this, but when we were in the street in Tripoli in 2021, we were speaking with the Pope, and we have sent him several letters through the bridge that I was mentioning earlier. And he responded to our letter publicly, saying he received us, he feels closer to us, and he acknowledged our pain. Through these 2 years later, I met him in person, and I explained to him what we have been doing, what we went through, and what a hope he gives not only to the people in Libya, but also the people who are here in Europe, and how he could use his popularity, his being acknowledged by global society to influence the situation in Libya into a positive way, that a child can have a dream, a parent can have their dream fulfilled of having a home, of having a place of belonging and inclusion.
Okay. Is there anything that I forgot to ask you, something very important that you still want to share?
Well, there are many things. Everything is important, the ones we have spoken about. And here, as again, I will reiterate to the listeners that when it comes to solidarity, let's put an example. I keep using this example and I feel bad, but we have to use it. The Ukrainian brothers and sisters, how they have been able to be dissolved in the European communities. 8 million Ukrainian refugees in less than a year. Where did these people go? We don't see them under the bridges of Brussels or Bern or in Geneva, homeless and unsheltered or unfed. But we do see people who have come from several African countries a number of years ago and who continue to arrive in a few thousand numbers, not even up to 1 million. And these people, we are the threat to European democracy or to European survival. So we invite the European people again, the listeners, to question their consciousness, to question their act of solidarity, and to know how to balance it. It has to be balanced. Let's not buy the institutional racism that our politicians are inviting and manipulating us to act in. There is so much that we can do. There is so much to feed all of us. There is so much to instill hope for our humanity. And thank you.
Well, thank you, David. I think this last point is a very, very good example. And I sincerely hope that one day your mind will be free to do joyful things instead of waking up and going to sleep every day with all these horrible stories, yours and others, and trying constantly to help, which must be a terrible burden. I really hope that one day you can be free of that. And let's hope for a better world, yeah, for everyone. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
And for our listeners, don't forget to be on the lookout for our next podcast, the podcast to restore your faith in humanity.
While you're waiting for the next episode of our podcast, why don't you check our website, fondation-ghf.one. You will find a lot of information, interesting thoughts, and fascinating stories there.